Sansarata.
Sansarata.
In accordance with.
In accordance with.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Suta Goswami explained, I shall now explain to you the very subjects explained by the great sage in answer to King Pariksit's inquiries. Please hear them very attentively. Translation responsibly. Sri Suta Goswami explained.
I shall now explain to you.
The very subjects explained by the great sage. In answer to King Pariksit's inquiries. Please hear them attentively. Purport. Any question that is put forward may be answered by quoting the authority, and that satisfies the Sena section. That is the system even in the law court. The best lawyer gives evidence from the past judgment of the court without taking much trouble to establish his case. This is called the parampara system. The learned authorities follow it without manufacturing rubbish interpretations. Ishwara, Parama, Krishna, Satchid, Ananda, Vigraha, Anadiradi, Govinda, Sava, Karana, Karana. Brahma Samhita 5.1. Let us all obey the Supreme Lord, whose hand is in everything without exception. Thus then, the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Bhagavatam, is the answer to all questions. Omigyan Tibidandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kaupa Turupyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Petitanam Avanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So it's very auspicious today because the second canto is finishing, and tomorrow is very auspicious because the third canto is beginning. Right there. So the beginning of the canto, the end of the canto, that's considered very auspicious. Actually, just recitation of the Bhagavatam is auspicious because the Bhagavatam is the remedy for all the problems in the world, and it is the remedy for all the problems in our life also. So therefore, we must study the Bhagavatam systematically, categorically, and regularly. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nitya means? Yeah, always, or every day. Why did Maharaj Pariksit speak Bhagavatam in 7 days?
He's about to die.
Yeah, he's about to die. Yeah. But why did Shukadev take 7 days?
Because this is very big.
Because what?
Cannot complete before the 7 days and night because this is not talking about Krishna, it's very big, so many verses.
But what is the symbolism? Why is it that it took 7 days? Yeah, because we're meant to hear it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Nityam. Nityam means every day. So that's why the Bhagavatam is spoken in 7 days, because you're meant to hear it every day. So if you can't come to the class every day, then you should be hearing every day. That's the point. Especially if you're a brahmachari or a brahmacharini. Now, if you're a brahmachari or a brahmacharini, Prabhupada said, this is the best life. Brahmachari life is the best life. Brahmacharini life is the best life because you don't have anything else to do. You can only listen and hear about Krishna's pastimes. It is the best. When I was a brahmachari, every day, I listened for 8 years, between 2 hours and 4 hours of lectures every day. just listening. When I get up in the morning, even to this day, I still do it. I get up in the morning, first thing I do when I go and brush my teeth and I'm getting ready, then I listen to a lecture. And I've been doing that for years. You know. So for those 8 years, I was listening. And then when I was going out on Sankirtan every day, you know, I'd drive out in the car. So I was listening to lectures in the car. And then during lunchtime, I was listening to lectures. And then on the way back, right, and then some in the evening, if I take bath again, then listening. So every day, 2 hours to 4 hours every day, for years and years and years and years. And even now, as a fallen grihastha, I still listen at least half an hour to 1 hour every day, right, to lectures. So if I can't be in the temple and I can't hear the Bhagavatam directly, then I make sure that I am hearing the Bhagavatam every day by hearing transcendental sound vibration. So Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. The Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. It solves all the problems in life. Hands up if you have any problems in your life. Okay, some devotees have problems. So we all have problems, and what is the answer? Right? The answer is the Bhagavatam. The answer is Krishna consciousness. If you are Krishna conscious, you don't have problems. Right? But then again, the nature of the material world is to have problems, even if you're Krishna conscious. Just like in the is it second canto? It might have already been in the second canto, or it's in the third canto, one of the two. Brahma, at the beginning of the universe, he is sitting on the lotus flower, and the celestial winds are blowing the lotus flower. So Prabhupada points out that he's the only one in the universe at the time. This is the beginning of the universe. And Prabhupada points out, because Brahma's in the material world now. He's not in the spiritual world anymore. As soon as you go into the material world, there are problems. Right? Your home goes like that. It's blowing continuously. You know, you can't escape problems in the material world. Even Prabhupada, who is also transcendental, Prabhupada is from Goloka, he is beyond this material world. But in terms of experiencing this material world, there were problems. Prabhupada said, management gives me a headache. Interesting, Prabhupada said that. Management gives me a headache. Prabhupada said, my transcendental purports, he said, they are my personal ecstasies. Prabhupada would wake up every morning, 12:30 at night, right, without an alarm clock. After 2 hours of rest, Prabhupada would just wake up and begin to translate the Bhagavatam for maybe 6 hours every morning. Right? Prabhupada said that was his ecstasy, my personal ecstasies. That's why if you want to know Prabhupada, like sometimes people think, well, I didn't see Prabhupada, I haven't been with Prabhupada. No, we can be with Prabhupada every day just by reading his books. Prabhupada said, my books are better than me. He said that. So you read Prabhupada's books, you are with Prabhupada. You understand the heart of Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, the best of me is in the books. Yeah. So Prabhupada would wake up in the morning and he said, these are my transcendental ecstasies. But he said, the management, that gives him a headache. One time he was in Vrindavan when he was establishing the Krishna Balaram Mandir and Hari Sori Prabhu was serving Prabhupada. And it was problems because Prabhupada's disciples were young. They were in India. They were Western, but they were in India. They were getting cheated. They were spending too much money on everything because they didn't know the prices. And people in India try to take your money all the time. You know, that's their dharma. Is to take as much off you as they can. So everyone was getting exploited. So Prabhupada would come. And Prabhupada, he would spend time in Vrindavan after 1975 when the temple was open. And he would spend there. He was there for a month at a time. And he had to manage, the temple himself. To train everyone. And he'd get very upset. Why are you being cheated? He would get on the rickshaw. Prabhupada would go out and get a rickshaw. He'd get on the rickshaw or go to get on the rickshaw and then the rickshaw driver would try to charge twice as much. That's what they do in India. They try to charge you twice as much. So Prabhupada would just walk off. And then he'd walk, and the man would chase after him, giving the correct price. And Prabhupada was very frugal with money, very particular. He said not 1 cent of Krishna's money should be wasted in sense gratification. He was so particular. So he had to manage the temple. Prabhupada himself was managing the temple, plus translating the Bhagavatam, plus running ISKCON. Right? You think you've got a lot of service to do. Right? Prabhupada was doing everything, running the whole movement. So then, one time he was sitting there in Vrindavan, and then he just leant back and he said, "I have brain fag." And Harisori Prabhu said, "Brain fag, Prabhupada?" He said, "Yes, brain fag." He said, "My brain is all this management." And he got up and he went to take his bath. Prabhupada was extremely regulated, right? Everything had to be on time. I don't know what happened to ISKCON when he left, but it's like ISKCON's become an upper sampradaya. Because Prabhupada wasn't like that. You know, it's this whole thing now. You have a hall program, just like who was here recently? Did that program? Govinda Prabhu did a hall program over there. So they said 7:30 or something, and then everyone starts rocking up at 8 o'clock, and then you know, then most can get there at 8:15, and then some are still coming at 8:30. This is bogus. This is not Prabhupada's system. Prabhupada was there. When Prabhupada said 8:30, it means 8:30. Right? Prabhupada was regulated. It means every day he would take his bath at that time. He'd just get up, whatever he's doing, just get up and just go and take bath because it was time for bath. Massage every day. Lunch every day. One time he was one of his cooks in India, one of his female disciples. Her name is, starts with P. What's her name?
Palika.
Yeah, Palika. Yeah. Palika was cooking for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was so particular. When he said lunch at 12 o'clock, it means 12 o'clock. Doesn't mean 3 minutes past 12. So she was 3 minutes late for some reason. Usually she was always on time because she knew Prabhupada was so particular. So she walked in 3 minutes late and Prabhupada's just looking at the door. And she walks in, Prabhupada's just glaring at her. Prabhupada said, "I've been waiting for 12 years. Right? And Prabhupada said, "If digestion is there and you do not feed it, it causes sickness. Right? Right? It causes dis-ease. If you're hungry and you don't eat, disease comes. Although Prabhupada said that most of the devotees are sick in ISKCON because they eat too much. When he went to India in the beginning, he had 40 or 50 disciples with him. And they were coming to Prabhupada all the time to get money, to buy medicine. And then Prabhupada, he was spending so much on medicine because everyone was getting sick. So then when they came, then Prabhupada said, "The policy is from now on, when they come to ask for money for medicine, they have to fast for 3 days. Right? And after they're fasted for 3 days, if they're still sick, then we'll give them money for medicine." He said they're all sick because they're eating too much. And if you look at ISKCON, that's why everyone's sick. Right? Devotees have to go to Dr. Dan and you know, everyone. Right? Spending thousands of dollars, just fast for a couple of days. Right, get rid of your problem. Unless you've really got a problem, then after 3 days, if you're fasting, if the problem's still there, okay, now we know you're sick. Right? But if you're just sick because you're eating too much, which is why most devotees are sick, then that's the problem. So Prabhupada was so regulated. Right? And when he took bath, he was so regulated. Harisori Prabhu said he was flying from, I think it was from India to Melbourne, and Prabhupada, he was in the airport, and he was so regulated, and it was time for him to take bath. So he said to Harisori Prabhu, he said, "Okay, we're going to go and take bath." So they went into the bathroom at the Singapore airports. You've been to the Singapore airport, you know the bathroom? You know, like big bathrooms. And so Prabhupada's in there, he just takes off all his cloth, just puts on his gumsho, right? And it's just a sinks. There's no shower. There's just toilets and sinks. And he gets his loto, and he starts like bathing himself, just like that. Yeah, just like bathing himself. And like water's going everywhere. And you know, in Singapore airports, there's a guy in there who's cleaning. That's his full-time cleaning job. He's always in there cleaning. And he's just looking at Prabhupada and just thinking, "What's this guy doing?" Prabhupada just pouring water all over himself. And water coming. Right. And then Prabhupada didn't even care. You could see the guy was angry, but he didn't care. Prabhupada's just like, you know, taking a bath, everything. And then he gets his gumsho, dries himself, dresses himself, puts the tealak on. And then he just walks out. His Prabhupada was so regulated. So regulated. If you go to Singapore airport now, they have a place where you can take bath. They have showers. It costs $8. It's just a travel tip. If you go, I do it when I go to India. Because, you know, you've already been on the plane for 6 hours. You need to freshen up. Pay $8. You have a shower. It's very refreshing. Like that. So. But those days, there was no facility. So you just had to... Prabhupada would do that. He would just. So the point is, he was regulated. So the nature of this material world is it will give you problems. You cannot avoid. Even the pure devotee cannot avoid. You look at the Pandavas. Why did they go through so many problems? Because that is the nature of the material world. They got sent to the forest for... How long did they have to go to the forest for? It was 13, right? Ram went for 14, and they went for 13. So 12 years in the forest, and then the final year was incognito. They hid in Virat's kingdom, right? The whole pastime, right? Ecstatic pastimes. Arjuna was a eunuch. Arjuna, you know, the eunuchs in India, like they're men, but they dress like girls, you know, like cross-gender, like that. Arjuna was like that for a year. Imagine Arjuna. Right, the most powerful kshatriya in the world, right, to dress up like a girl for, you know, for a year. You know how ready he was for that war? You know, when that war came, you know how ready he was? You know, to destroy that army? You know, he had to dress like a girl for a year. Right, he was focused. So, Arjuna, one time, they made a deal because the Pandavas had one wife. Now, what was their wife's name? Draupadi. But she married five husbands. Usually in India, it's permissible the other way. When Prabhupada began ISKCON, when he first came, he saw there's so many Matajis that need to get married. So he said, okay, the men can marry more than one Mataji. So that is polygamy. And then they said, Prabhupada's illegal in this country. And Prabhupada said, okay, then we will not do it. But actually, that's the Vedic system. Because on the earth, there's always more women than men. Right? So that's why in the Vedic system, you see like Vasudev, Krishna's father, 13 wives or 16 wives. Right? That was common. Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they would have all the Vaishyas, the rich Vaishyas, they would have many wives. Maybe the Sudras only have one wife because they cannot maintain. And the Brahmanas weren't so interested. But the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas always had more like that. So, they won her. Arjuna won Draupadi in the Swayambara. Swayambara means there was a competition. Draupadi's father, Drupada, he invited all the Kshatriyas on the earth, you come. If you want to win my daughter, come. We'll have a competition. Right? And then, how did you have to win Draupadi? Right? You have to pick up the bow and string the bow. Now, the bow is very difficult to string. Most of the Kshatriyas could not even string it. There's only about six of them who strung it. Right? Duryodhan, Karna, Jayadrath, I think Shishupal. There's only not many that could even string the bow. It was so powerful just to pull it back and then put the string on. There's only a few of them who could do it. Right? And then you had to look in the water. There's how do you call it? What do you call that?
Pot.
Yeah, like that. What is it? Like a pond, yeah. It was like a little... I know the story. Yes. You had to look into the little pond of water. So the water was there, and the water was shimmering. So when water is clear, it's like a mirror, right? But when the water is shimmering, it's very difficult to see the reflection. So you had to look into the water, and then looking into the water, you had to take the bow, and you had to shoot, and on the roof, there was a wheel, a chakra, like a chariot wheel, and the wheel was spinning, and behind the wheel there was a fish, and you had to hit the fish in the eye, right, to get Draupadi. Right. Now, why did Drupada do that? Why did he do that? Why would Drupada make it so difficult? Because he knew only one person could do that, and he wanted to flush Arjuna out, because he knew he was alive. Everyone thought they were dead. Because of the house of luck. Right? The house had been set on fire and everyone thought the Pandavas were dead. But he knew Arjuna was alive. There was a rumor they escaped. So he was trying to flush him out because he knew only he could do it. Actually, there's one other person who could do it. That was Karna. Right? So Karna went out, picked up the bow, went, strung it. Everyone else couldn't even string it. Karna just picks up and strings it, just looks in, and he's ready. And he was going to hit it in the eye, the fish. And Draupadi said, even if you hit it, I won't marry you. She said, you're the son of a chariot driver. And he became so angry, and then he let go of that, and then he just missed the eye because he was so angry. She insulted him in front of everyone. Karna, he hated that. And that's why he took revenge. He said, I will destroy these guys later on. Like that. There's so much intrigue. The Mahabharata's far out. If they make a movie one day, it's going to be... Not this Bollywood version. You know, that's not so good. But if they make a real one day, it'd be amazing. So, Arjuna's a brahmana, dressed as a brahmana, and he gets up, he's sitting with all the brahmanas, he gets up and he walks out, and everyone's like, what's happening? There's a brahmana walking out. The brahmana walks out, circumambulates the bow, offers his obeisance to the bow, picks it up, strings it, and just hits the eye, just like that, and everyone's like, what happened? Right? And then there's an uproar, right? So Draupadi takes the garland, puts it on, Arjuna walks out, Draupadi follows him, right? And then everyone walks out, and then the Kshatriyas go crazy. You know, we're not going to let a brahmana take the princess. Who are they? So they all chase, you know, Karna and everyone, they pick up their weapons, they chase out, and then Bhima and Arjuna get outside the stadium, and there's a huge fight. And Arjuna has the bow, so he actually defeats Karna at that point in time. And Karna says, this must be Arjuna. It can't be someone else. And Bhima picks up, because he didn't have his club, so he picks up a tree, right, and he cuts all the branches off with his hand, and then he just starts swinging the tree around. And then they all disappear. So they get back that evening, and they'd been out to beg alms, because they said to their mother, Kunti, we said, we go to get alms. We go and beg, and then we come back, and then we all share it together. So they come back, and they're all smiling to each other. And then they get there, and Yudhisthira says, Mother, we have something, we've brought something. You know, Draupadi's there, right? And she just thought they meant food. And she just said, distribute it amongst yourselves. She said, divide it amongst yourselves, right? And then Yudhisthira was like, oh my God, because Yudhisthira was so truthful, right? He would not lie, or he would not, if something was said, he would not. So then when Kunti walked out, and Kunti saw that what had happened, she'd said, divide it amongst yourselves, and it was Draupadi, then she was right there. So Draupadi in the previous life, she had worshipped Shiva, and she had requested him 5 times, give me a husband, give me a husband, give me a husband, give me a husband, give me a husband. So then when Shiva appeared, he said, you will have 5 husbands. He said, I don't want 5 husbands, I just want one husband. He said, no, you have said, so you will take 5. So then she got the 5 husbands. So at that time, they had to go to the forest. They were in the forest, right? So they were going through so much difficulty, right? So even the pure devotees in this material world, they have to go through so much difficulty. So then, later on, when it came out that they were the Pandavas and they took the throne again and they took Hastinapur, then Narada came to visit them. And Narada, he said, this is a difficult situation, because Narada came and the Pandavas were there and they said, we want you to meet our wife. Right? So then Draupadi came, and when Narada saw Draupadi and saw how beautiful she was, and then when she left, he said, she will cause problems. You will fight amongst each other because she's so beautiful, so qualified. So then he said, you have to have a system so you do not become enemies of each other. So they made a system that if one of them was with Draupadi, the others could not be with Draupadi at that time. So if Bhima was with her, then everyone else had to leave. And they made a system that if one of them were with Draupadi in private and the other one entered, they would have to go to the forest for 1 year. Right. So it was a serious situation. They're taking it very seriously. So then Arjuna, Yudhisthira was with Draupadi in the armory where they keep all the weapons. And Arjuna, someone came to him, a brahmana came to him, and he said, some dacoits, some thieves have stolen my cows. So Arjuna said, no problem, I will get the... But then he thought, I have to go and get my bow, and the bow is in the armory, and at the moment Yudhisthira and Draupadi are alone in the armory. So if I go in there, I will break the promise, I'll have to go to the forest for 1 year. So he thought for a moment, then he thought, no, I cannot leave the brahmana unprotected, the cows unprotected. So he entered into the armory and he put his head down and he said, Yudhisthira, please forgive me. He picked up the bow and he went and he killed the dacoits and then he gave the cows back to the king, to the brahmana. But then when he came back, Yudhishthira said, you don't have to go to the forest. He said, this was a special circumstance. And Arjuna said, no, I've broken the vow. Right? And this is what it was like in the Vedic times. If you took a vow, it was a vow. Right? That's why it says in Kali Yuga, don't make vows in front of the deities. Rupa Goswami says that in Nectar of Devotion. Don't go in front of the deities and make a vow. Because most people in Kali Yuga can't even keep a vow. It's very difficult for people. If, you know, someone says, I'll do this for you, right? You know, whether or not they're going to actually do it, you don't know. But in the Vedic times, if you took a vow, that was it. So Arjuna voluntarily went to the forest for 1 year by himself, away from his brothers. But what did he do? Just like us, if we get sick or something, right, what do we do? As devotees. Suddenly we're sick or we have to stay away from the other devotees, or what do we do? Right? We read the Bhagavatam. Right? Because we've got extra time on our hands. So we read the Bhagavatam. I remember one time I got sick here in the ashram for about 3 or 4 weeks. I got back from India and I got jaundice, hepatitis A. So my eyes went yellow and my chest went yellow and like that. So I had jaundice. So I was sick. I couldn't do any service for about a month. I was very weak. And so I just read Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's books for a month. I was actually happy. I was thinking, this is pretty good. Right. So Arjuna, when he went for that month, even though it was such a difficult time, because he had to go to the forest, but he just took Brahmanas with him, and they just studied the Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures for a year. And actually it says in the Mahabharata, Arjuna was as learned as the sages who were instructing him. Arjuna was incredibly Shastric, because he studied all the time. Whenever he had in between archery and all of his other dunnera sciences, his fighting sciences, he would just study the books. And that's what we should be doing. If you have spare time, then read Prabhupada's books. Right? And you can make spare time. So Arjuna and the Pandavas, right, even when there was difficulty in this material world, because even for pure devotees there will be difficulty, but they take shelter of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. The Bhagavatam is the answer to all problems, collectively, individually. Prabhupada says, if the devotees come together in ISKCON and chant together, do kirtan together, in the morning and in the evening, they said, Prabhupada said, management will be at your fingertips. Why will that be? Because it means the devotees will not argue together. Right? When we're having kirtan together before, right? Is there any bad feelings between anyone? Right? Everything evaporates. Even this person you're not talking to and you don't like, I've done that before in kirtan. I've got some problem with someone, I'm not talking to them. And then we're in the kirtan and we're kind of thinking, oh, I'm not going to dance with this guy. You know, it's like, you know. But then after half an hour, 1 hour, 1 hour, the kirtan's gone, then everything just evaporates. And then you just see him as a blissful spiritual living entity. By the end of the kirtan, you're best friends. Right? And you can't live without each other anymore. Right? At the beginning of the kirtan, there was not even a relationship. Right? So this is the power of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. If you're hearing every day the Bhagavatam, right, it purifies the heart. Right? Vidhuno ti sukrit satam. Everything becomes cleansed. And you will deal with devotees on the spiritual platform. Right? It will solve the problems in your life. So if you do kirtan with the devotees, and if you're regularly hearing with the devotees, right, it solves all the problems. Right? ISKCON will not have problems if we're hearing and chanting together. Right? And we will not have problems. Right? Even though we've got problems. Right? But the problems become insignificant. They just shrink into perspective. Just like Indrajumna Swami, if you read his diaries, then a number of years ago, Maharaj was in, I think, South Africa. He went for a doctor's checkup and he had a mark on his back, and the doctor said that may be melanoma, maybe cancer. So Maharaj said that all of his problems in his life just suddenly went just tiny. Everything was not a problem anymore. He only had one problem. He's going to die. Right? So when you're going to die, there's no more problems. You don't worry about your bank account, or you don't worry about your broken chair, or or your alarm system doesn't work, or you've got ants in the office. ringing up, Prabhu, what shall I do? I've got ants, are you going to worry about that if you find out you're about to die? Right? So it brings everything into perspective. So when you read the Bhagavad Gita, everything comes into perspective. Right? If you're hearing and chanting with devotees, everything just becomes insignificant. Right? All of our problems, you think of what your biggest problem is right now. What is your biggest problem right now? Right? But then if you're hearing and chanting about Krishna, it just becomes insignificant. It's not such a big problem. So that is the potency of hearing and chanting. It brings things into perspective. Just like there was a nice story from the Mahabharata, an anger management story. Does anyone have anger management problems? Okay. One or two honest people, very good, very honest. Three or four honest people, the rest of you are too embarrassed to put your hands up. So, Satyaki, Arjuna, Satyaki, Balaram, and Krishna, they were traveling. Satyaki was the general of the Dwarka army, the Yadu dynasty. So they were traveling, so they had to camp overnight. So then they said, okay, Satyaki, you take the first shift, you stay up for 2 hours. Then you wake up Balaram, he will take the next shift, he will stay up for 2 hours. And then Krishna will do the last shift, and he will guard the camp. So everyone, Krishna and Balaram took rest, and Satyaki was guarding. And then one Rakshasa came, and the Rakshasa said, I will eat you, and then I will eat Krishna and Balaram. And Satyaki said, you can try. This is Satyaki. He's the general of the Yadus. And he's Krishna's military guru, actually. So he fought with the Rakshasa for 2 hours. They fought and fought and fought. And then just at the end of the 2 hours, Satyaki was exhausted, right? And then the Rakshasa disappeared, and he woke, and then Balaram woke up. And he said, you take rest. And Satyaki said, be very careful, there's a Rakshasa here. Right? So then, the Rakshasa, Satyaki took rest. Balaram got out of the camp. And then suddenly, the Rakshasa came again. And he said, I will eat Satyaki, I will eat you, and I will eat Krishna. So Balaram fought with him for 2 hours. And the more Balaram fought with him, the harder he fought. Then at the end of the 2 hours, the Rakshasa was getting stronger and stronger. So at the end of the 2 hours, the Rakshasa disappeared, right? And then Krishna woke up, and Balaram said, there's a Rakshasa here, be very careful. And he fell asleep. And then Krishna was the last one, right? And then he was looking, where is this Rakshasa? Right? And then the Rakshasa appeared before him, right? And he said, I will eat you, I will eat Balaram, I will eat Satyaki. And Krishna just said, he said, no, you won't. He said, yes, I will. Chris said, Chris said, you won't eat them. I will destroy. And Chris said, you haven't got a chance. So that Rakshasa, he got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And then he was so small, Krishna just picked him up and just tied him in his cloth and like that. And then he woke up. Balaram woke up. Satyaki woke up. And they said, oh, did you see the Rakshasa? Right? And Krishna said, just went, this guy? Is that him? And they said, yeah, that's him. And then he tied it up again. So who was the Rakshasa? Who was he? Yeah, he was anger personified. So if anger is there, and you feed anger with anger, then it gets bigger and more powerful. You know when someone says something to you? Hey, Saleh. Means stupid. In English we say stupid. Hey, stupid. Like that. So then when you say that, right, person goes, hey, who are you calling Saleh? Then there is big fight. Because right? When you're angry and then you become angry, then like that. Right? You see, between husband and wife, right? Husband says something, wife says something, then suddenly like that. And then and then most of the time, when the husband kills the wife, right, it happens within 7 minutes. You know, just little fight, and then just go like that, and everyone gets so angry and like that. So that is the problem. So if you want to control anger, Right? Then you just have to don't deal with anger in an angry way, but reduce the anger, right? Which is a very sensitive thing to do, because sometimes someone's angry and then you go, "What happened?" And suddenly that goes wrong. So you have to be careful. The point is, don't deal with anger. So then our problems become less. So if you are in the Bhagavatam consciousness, if you study the Bhagavatam, if you're chanting the holy name properly, then your consciousness will be purified. And then when you deal with other devotees, you'll deal with them properly and there won't be friction. Even when there's problems, you'll deal with them properly instead of just erupting. Instead of just erupting every time there is a problem. So the Bhagavatam is the answer to our questions. Right? It's the answer to our problems. So if we study regularly and we hear and chant regularly, everything will become purified. Our heart will become clean. And then it doesn't mean problems go away, but you just learn to deal with the other devotees properly. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments about what we discussed. It's like Leela Shakti. Leela Shakti. Like that. In the Brahma Vimohan Leela, when Krishna steal all the cowherd boys, that was on Baladev Purnima. So you know. So Balaram for 1 year, he was also, he did not understand that Krishna had become all the boys, all the calves, all the cows. Krishna did not, Balaram did not know. So if Krishna wants to, he can cover Balaram. If he wants to. Usually it does not happen, but Krishna's Yogamaya can cover Balaram also. Even Yogamaya can cover Krishna if he wants to. You know when Agasura opened the mouth and all the boys ran in, and for a moment Krishna thought, all my friends have gone. So he was thinking, and then he said, oh, I'm God. Right, no problem. Yeah, but for a moment then he was Yogamaya. So it's up to him. If he wants to be covered even himself, he can forget. So if he wants to cover Balaram, then Balaram can forget. Okay. Please come again. Any other question? What did he do with it? I'm not sure what he did. The point is that Krishna is transcendental. So if Krishna is angry, then that is transcendental anger. It's not material anger. If Krishna, sometimes you look at the deities. Prabhupada said the deities are the barometer of bhakti. Prabhupada said, how do you know that you're doing well in Krishna consciousness? Because the deities are smiling at you. Just sometimes when you look at them, they're not smiling. Ever happens? Sometimes I look at them and they're angry. They're looking at me and I'm like, whoa. So you don't want to make them angry, because their anger is spiritual. So they're looking at you and they're not happy. This means, that's spiritual anger. So if Krishna becomes angry, it's not like we become angry. That's transcendental. No. But hopefully they're smiling at us most of the time. Any other question? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.